Roger Miller has been married to his wife for 41 years and has a 40-year-old queer daughter. 3 years ago, he came out as a gay-identifying man. He and his wife have decided to maintain their marriage, and he now has a boyfriend. He refers to his status as a mixed orientation marriage. My takeaway is how quickly Roger took ownership of who he is and what he wants for his life. This conversation opened my eyes to many ideas that were not on my radar. Don't miss this episode. Hello, Roger Miller. It is so good to have you on the podcast today. I know just enough to know that I'm very excited about hearing your story. Welcome.
Thanks a lot, Maddox. I'm thrilled to be here. I reached out to you after one of your recent episodes about how powerful it had been and how transformative it had been in my life, and was starting to be transformative, I should say. And you offered to let me come on the podcast if I were interested, and I thought about it, and then I didn't think about it very long, and I said yes, I would be, but I haven't listened to all your episodes. I've only been listening maybe 6 months or so, but I go back and pick up the old ones. I hadn't yet heard anybody's story who was quite like mine, and I thought it might be a nice addition to your catalog of episodes.
I am quite sure it's going to be an excellent addition, because I do not have anything that is even remotely like this so far. So awesome. I think it's going to be a treat for me and for the listeners. And I say treat in saying that it's going to provide a voice that opens a space for other men that might be in a similar situation that don't quite know how to navigate it. And yes, that's what this is all about. So thank you so much for your willingness to come in and do this. So I guess my first question for you would be, how do you define authentic gay man? What does that mean to you?
You get so many different answers on the podcast to that question, and they're all pretty terrific.
They are, aren't they? Amazingly, yeah. So. Like every one of them are just spot on, and yet they're all completely different.
I didn't really think a lot about it in advance, but I think the short answer is that as an authentic gay man, I live my life as honestly as humanly possible. And I always thought that I had been an honest person, and I had been, but there was that one piece of me that I'd been deluding myself about for so many years. And now that I've made that journey to being out and to being fully disclosed to my still wife and my children, my adult children, all my friends, even just in the past week, my brother who lives in a distant state, who can, you know, is a, I think I should describe him as an evangelical Christian. I was afraid of not being accepted, but I've just moved beyond that. And so this, to be authentic, is just being myself. And that doesn't mean behaving badly. It means being me. And for me, that is being a good guy, a sober guy. I've been sober for over 7 years now, and an out gay man. And I apologize for none of those things, my sobriety or the fact that I'm attracted to other men. And I found such acceptance and love in the LGBTQ community. And this is at the age of 66, it's I feel like I'm in the best part of my life yet.
I hear it and I feel it as you say those words. I'm very sensitive to energy, and I can tell that you have already come to a place where you're owning who you are.
Yes.
I think it's something that we as GBTQ men struggle with. I've interviewed men that have been out forever and are still struggling with owning who they are. So I just want to say, you know, my hat's off to you and bravo for, you said you started the coming out process how long ago?
3.5 years ago.
And you're already able to own it unapologetically. That says a lot.
Yes, I'm not bashful about it at all. I had been in the pride parades before I came out because my church is very LGBTQ affirming. It's a UU church, and I had been there before, and but never celebrating my own identity. It was being an ally. My daughter is queer, and she'll be 40 late this summer, or later on this summer. And, I think some people may have interpreted some of my Facebook posts and such as me being an ally to my daughter, as opposed to me just being out. And so I've had to clarify that for a few people, but it's all good. When I first got sober, and that's been 7.5 years ago, there's so much shame involved with being an alcoholic or drug addict or whatever, but my problem was alcohol, that when you start that recovery process, the last thing that you want anybody to know is that you went to treatment, or, you know, that you're seeing a therapist, or you go to a support group or whatever. That's embarrassing. But over time, and thankfully it didn't take very long, there's such acceptance in the sober community that it becomes just another label. You know, I have no problem calling myself a recovering alcoholic. That's who I am. I'm also right-handed. I have brown eyes. I'm 5'9", et cetera. It's just a label. Similarly, that label of my sexual orientation, which I had rejected for so long, did not accept it. Once I finally did, the level of healing is just so magnificent. Early in sobriety, when you start to label yourself publicly as an alcoholic in recovery, there's so much strength in that. And there's so much weight that comes off of your shoulders. And it's the same thing with coming out. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but my God, I mean, when I told the very first person, it was January the 3rd of 2020, it was at my first ever therapy session. And I wasn't there to talk about recovery. I wasn't there to talk about PTSD or depression or any of the other issues that this particular therapist dealt with directly. She wanted to know why I was there. And I said, because I'm gay and you're the first person on this earth that I've ever told other than myself. And I need help figuring out now what. Where do I go from here? And, in hindsight, it really went pretty quickly. But when you're on the other side looking at it, it seems ginormous. Such a ginormous problem.
It is ginormous. And I think so many people who haven't walked in our shoes don't understand. You know, there's this common belief that we're lying to everybody, that we're trying to be somebody different than what we are, and we're lying to everybody. And they don't stop to realize that we're lying to ourselves. You know, it's not like we have a full grasp on it and we're lying to everybody else. That's secondary. You know, we're lying to ourselves because we're not ready to face the truth.
The episode that I think was when the bright light came on to me, and I should say that, you know, when I started coming out, I was 62 years old, kind of a late bloomer. I was installing a brand new smart television downstairs where I watch TV with my wife, and I'd never had a smart TV, and this was at the end of 2019. And once that was all set up, then I came to realize that it was going to be connected to Netflix and YouTube. And I was just stricken with horror because my wife might immediately find out that I've been watching LGBTQ movies on Netflix. Oh, the horror. Or that I might like to watch college wrestlers, you know, on YouTube, whatever, you know. None of this was porn, although, you know, I'd certainly done enough of that on my computer. But that idea of her seeing that information on the television just terrified me. And I went, as soon as I could, I went running upstairs to log into all of my accounts and flush all of the browsing history and all of my favorites on Netflix and all the things that I had queued up that I wanted to watch. I deleted it all. And I was just thinking that this is ridiculous. You're a 62-year-old man. And in your sobriety, you are endeavoring to live a rigorously honest life. This does not compute. And this has to end.
Well, you know, you spoke earlier about shame. And I think that's what you're describing right now. The thought that she would find your playlist or the movies you've been watching just brought up, I would imagine, intense shame.
Absolutely. Right.
I would very much, if you don't mind, Roger, I'd like to unpack a little bit of that. I think it's a very valid topic because I'm getting the gist that you initially experienced a great deal of shame, but you no longer experience that shame. You've gone from point A, extreme shame, to no shame concerning your sexuality.
Right.
How did you do that? What were the things that you had to think, or who did you have to be, or what did you have to do to get to the other side of that?
I think the first thing that came to mind is it's a learning process that doesn't, it's not like throwing a switch, of course. But it was a process of being with other men like myself who were gay as I am, or bi, which I am not, gay or bi, and yet married to women in heterosexual marriages. I honestly didn't know that there was such a thing. You know, I was so ignorant about that. And very early on, yet probably within the first month or two, I found a local support group here in my home, in my hometown, and it was a small group of gay and bi men who were married to women, and we met for. I went to a few meetings, and this all happened right before COVID. which I still joke about because I waited to come out of the closet until just before we all went inside our houses and locked the door for 2 years. So I was trying to come out, but being in that space with other men and finding out that this is common and that we have a lot of the same issues, that helped. That led me to another much bigger group called Husbands Out to Wives, that has hundreds and hundreds of members throughout the U.S. and the world, that are men in mixed orientation marriages. There are any number of types of marriages. I mean, some of them are monogamous, some of them are open loop, closed loop. You name it. Some of the men have boyfriends. And once I found them, it was very helpful to just find out that I'm not alone, which is the same thing that I found out when I started getting sober, because when you start that journey, you think that you're the only one. You think you're the only one who's hiding bottles and empty cans. And all the things that people with that issue go to hide the shame that they feel about their drinking. And then when you get on the road to recovery, you find out that we all did that. You're not alone. And so joining with other men who are on this journey has been so helpful for me to expedite the amount of time that it's taken to get out and open. And, you know, I went to a concert last December in a very queer friendly place, and I felt no problem at all with holding the hand of the guy that I was with that evening in a very public space.
That's beautiful. My partner and I hold hands everywhere we go. Everywhere we go.
Why not?
Yeah. Why not? So am I hearing you say then that one aspect, one thing that helped you move through the shame was just to do what you needed to do to discover and find out that you weren't alone?
Right.
That there were others that were in the same boat, wearing the same shoes.
That's true. And the thing that I liked about these guys that I met in the local group and in HOW, the Husbands Out to Wives group, is that these guys are not on the DL at all. They are open and honest. And that was the main issue that was driving my shame, was that I was lying about this part of myself that I've been covering up all those years.
That's a valid point. So part of the coming through the shame was just to step into a more honest place in your life. Then, in other words, I guess I'm hearing you say that some of the shame was generated by being dishonest about who you were.
Right. And it's taken, it took some time with my second therapist, who the first one was not gay, but the second one that I work with currently, he is a gay man. And he's been very helpful to show the flashlight on all of my heteronormative thinking that had held me captive for so long. I am, like all of us, I'm a product of the time and space in which I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I was born in the, late 50s. Out in the Great Plains.
You and I are the same age.
Yeah, I'm 66.
I'm 66 as well.
I never knew a gay person. I've heard it referred to on I've heard it on one of the podcasts. I never heard it before. Purity culture 1.0, 2.0. But when they describe purity culture, that's what I grew up with. I did not get the restrictions and the shame of many of the people that I knew who grew up in Roman Catholic households. But nevertheless, my family was a conservative Protestant family where, as I had always heard, men have sex with women and women have sex with men, and they only do that on their wedding night.
Procreation. Yeah.
And there's no extramarital sex, no premarital sex. There's no divorce. I mean, I remember when my dad's older brother got divorced, and it was just a scandal to the family that he was divorced. And so, you know, I grew up feeling those things. And when my own, you know, fast forward to probably the 1990s, whenever Will and Grace, the first one, came out, I remember my children watching it and laughing at it. And I watched an episode and I said, and my daughter still laughs at me, I forbid them to watch Will and Grace because I just thought this is not appropriate for children. Oh my God. Well, isn't that ironic the way that all worked out?
Came back to bite you on the butt, didn't it?
Yeah. My daughter loves that. And you know, of course, now we go back and look at those episodes, and I don't even know what I was thinking. But you know, one time I talked to my therapist about, you know, we talk about who we're attracted to, what are you looking for? You know, he thought it was wonderful when I finally reached the point where I said, I'd like to have a boyfriend someday, because I do intend to stay married. I am not looking for a partner. I find hookup sex to be, I don't like it. I find it dangerous and icky, and it's not, you know, it's just not for me. A friend with benefits might be okay, but I, you know, a boyfriend is really what I'm looking for. But I went to the therapist and I said, you know, I don't think there's something in me that says I shouldn't be with a man who is the same age as or younger than my children. And he looked at me like I had horns growing out of the sides of my head. And he said, why do you say that? Why do you think that? And the only answer to that was, that's what I was raised to believe, I guess. And then, of course, he explained the rational thing, which is, there are many older gay men who like younger gay men, and younger gay guys who prefer older. And that if it's consensual and the ages are okay, then what's wrong with that? Now, I found some other reasons that, you know, maybe I need to not be with younger guys just because they can be such flakes and idiots. But, you know,
yeah, but those are just as abundant in our age group.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I don't know that age has a whole lot to do with that. I myself,
just some of these things that you just grew up with, and it just takes time, I think, to look analytically at that and say, there's really no good reason for that.
I'm my partner is 19 years younger than I am. Yeah. And I had initially some reservations about that. he actually helped me overcome those reservations.
It absolutely can work, and I see it all the time.
Yeah, I don't, you know, now that we've gotten settled, I don't ever think of him particularly as being younger, and I don't think he really thinks of me as being older. We feel very like equal partners.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways that I definitely take care of him, and then there are ways that he definitely takes care of me, and they're different.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have even remotely some type of a parent-child quality to it.
No.
None. Zero.
The first time somebody called me daddy, I wasn't sure what to make of it. And I guess I'm sort of indifferent to it. I mean, I wouldn't want to be involved with some guy who is looking to me as their father figure. I mean, I already have children and a grandchild. I'm not looking for that.
No, me either. I'm like first to say, don't call me daddy. I am not your daddy. And I don't want to be in any shape, form, or fashion. I want to be an equal partner.
Financially or in any other way.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I have this back. I want to track back for a minute to the shame conversation because I think it's so valid and valuable. I have this theory, and I'd love to know what you think of it. And it's simple. It's not the whole answer, but I think it's a piece. I've come to believe that one of the ways that we move through and overcome shame is to just merely come out with it and talk about it, whatever it is. Whatever it is. You know, I think that I've had several conversations now trying to get kind of just a grasp on it with different people in my life. And I think that two of the things that we as human beings experience the most shame about, one, of course, is just sex. And I'm not talking about gay sex. I'm just talking mm-hmm. about sex. We just have some real stuff. You know, we're all doing it. We all want it, but we don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And the other thing is, which I think is just really funny and weird at the same time, is poop. We all have to go to the bathroom. We all poop, but nobody wants to talk about that either, because there's just some weird shame about that. I think those are the two big ones. I think there's exceptions. I think that there could be others, but I think those are two heavy hitters. I led a workshop recently where we were talking about shame and overcoming shame. And what I led the workshop attendees through were putting them into dyads and having them openly talk about the thing that they felt the most shame about. And it was phenomenal to see the shifts and the energy shift right before your very eyes. You know, they're all in little dyads and I'm talking, watching them have their conversations about the thing they feel the most shame about. And you could literally see their body language change, their voice inflection change, their whole energy change as they were just saying it out loud. How does that land for you? What do you think about that?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And it gets easier every time you have the conversation. The first doctor's visit that I had with my PCP, when I basically had to change the check mark on the chart from one demographic group to the other and say gay, check, sexually active from no to yes. Once I had told him that, we had to have that conversation. It wasn't one that I had looked forward to, but I never had to have it twice. And now, you know, of course, now I'm on PrEP, and you know, part of that whole deal is I go in every 3 months for testing, and it's, you know, he asks me the questions that he as the doctor has to ask. And I'm perfectly forthcoming. That's also part of me atoning, that maybe is a strong word, for my history of the substance use disorder, was all the lying that I did to my doctor about my behavior. I don't do that anymore. If they ask me a question, I will answer it 100%. And, you know, if he wants to talk about, are you receptive or penetrative? I just answer the questions. Did you use protection or not?
How is that different? Just being able to fully answer those questions. How does that affect you?
Well, here's a magic word. It feels authentic. It's honest. I mean, why should I be ashamed? Exactly. Why should I be ashamed of who I am?
Exactly.
I'm a gay man. And I mean, we aren't all like this, but I particularly, you know, I like butt sex. Okay. There's a lot of us that do. And my doctor needs to talk to me about that. So we're going to talk about it. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
He's just doing his job.
You know, the one thing that I want to, I said it earlier, I want to call it out again, you know, just to make sure the listener is really getting this, part of what's really going on for you that's really working is you're owning who you are.
Right.
We have to do that. If we're ever going to have the life that we desire, we have to own who we are, whatever it is. You know, on our morning walk this morning, my boyfriend said something about me being weird. And I said, yes, I am. There was a time when I didn't like that. I didn't like being weird. Now I own that I'm weird. You know, I don't want to march to the beat of somebody else's drum. I want to march to the beat of my own drum. I want to stand out in a crowd rather than look like everybody else, because we're all little clones. Yes, I am weird. There's something really, really amazing about owning it, whatever it is.
I'm sure I have caused some people to snicker because, you know, I waited till I was 65 to get braces, to get tattooed. And, you know, I'm just having the best time. And yeah.
See this tattoo right here? This was 2017, March of 2017.
My first one is from a year ago. It is a lotus blossom, which has great spiritual significance. And it was designed by my daughter, who's quite a nice digital artist. And she and I paid for it. And she and I went to her tattoo artist, and we both got them on our forearm. So we got father-daughter tattoos.
You know, I think the beautiful thing about what you're describing, Roger, is there was a whole different life that started 3 years ago.
Right.
Hence the braces, hence the tattoos, and varying other things that you've probably done. A whole new life started, and everything looked different in the moment that that new life started.
Yes. I retired from my 40-hour. I've always worked in the public sector. I'm a professional librarian. I retired from my 40-hour week job actually pretty early, at the age of 54, and in 2012. And it was after that that my life just started to get smaller. I mean, I think a lot of people who retire find that to be true. I didn't travel. Of course, my drinking just got worse, and the isolation. But my point is that my life was just getting smaller and smaller. And the recovery process is what dragged me out into the sunshine again and got me into rubbing elbows with the rest of humanity that has figured out that they need to stick together to work on their problems. And I started that process. And once I did come out and was able to establish myself in the gay community, and my therapist was very helpful. You know, he suggested the Front Runners organization, which is a bunch of guys that walk every Saturday morning in our lovely Spring Grove Cemetery, a beautiful old cemetery here in Cincinnati, to Tri-State Primetimers, which is older gay men. I don't participate in that one anymore. The one I really wanted to do was the Cincinnati Men's Chorus. But then COVID came along and that wasn't going to be an option. So I waited and I joined that group in the fall of 2021. And it was just life-changing. Our current board president says that every time our chorus takes the stage, lives are changed. It can be people in the audience who maybe have never seen a whole stage full of gay men who seem normal and happy and who are having fun and loving their life, to maybe it's somebody like me in the chorus who has never done this before and for whom standing, and I've been a professional choral singer for over four decades with conservatory training, vast performing experience, but I'd never sung it with a group like that. And you know, for me to screw up the courage to do that was a big deal for me. So yeah, it was life-changing. And he's absolutely right.
I sang with the Turtle Creek Chorale in Dallas in the early 90s for about three and a half years. And at that time, it was touted as the largest gay chorus in the world. We had about 225 voices on stage every time we performed.
That's
awesome. It was quite an amazing thing. I actually, during that period of time, had the privilege of singing on the stage of Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
To a sold-out audience. It was amazing.
That's great.
Well, I'd like to hear more about the aspect of your story with your wife.
Okay.
You're still married.
Right.
And you use the term mixed
orientation
relationship or marriage.
Marriage, yes.
I'd like to hear more about that because that's not something I'm real familiar with.
Right.
And I think it's a unique thing. And so I'd love for you to kind of break it down. And how does that work? How do you have a wife and a boyfriend at the same time? I think there's people that really need to know, want to know.
Right. And be completely honest about it.
Yes.
So
yes. Living in integrity.
Yeah. So, well, it's been very helpful for me to find other men in the same situation. And I related to you before we started recording that I know another, I have a friend also in the Cincinnati Men's Chorus who is in a mixed orientation marriage. And he's been out for about a year longer than I have. And, you know, there's no two situations like this that are the same. I've learned that. I don't know all the particulars of his situation at all, but I do know that his wife is comfortable enough with his status as a gay man that, you know, I have been to two public events in the past 6 months where he has had his boyfriend and his wife at the event, sitting in a concert in a theater, with the boyfriend on one side and the wife on the other. My marriage is not there yet. My wife is aware that I recently have come along to a relationship that I am calling my first boyfriend. You know, she's aware of that. Our marriage, and we have been married for 41 years. I got married at age 24 in 1981. And I've heard it described as a companionate marriage, which is a polite way of saying that there's no physical intimacy. We love and care for each other. We've been living, I've been with her for so long. We've had our careers. We've raised our children. We have our grandchild, and we're heading into, she's a little older than I am, to the not the last days, but toward the latter part of our lives. And it was never on the table for me to step away from this marriage. I felt too much love and responsibility to provide for her. She has various health issues that require me to be the primary caregiver. And if I weren't here, I don't know who would be here. And that's a commitment that I made, and I'm willing to do that. I want to do that. But it's been a process of defining how much latitude and how much space I can have. And when I did come out to her, I was absolutely honest that I had never had sex with a man. She was the only person I had ever had sex with, although it had been decades in the past. A number of months later, I had decided that I was ready to begin to have that experience in my life. And, the question before me was, do I tell her or not? Because, like I said, I want to be honest. So, I confided in a couple of my sober friends. I confided in my therapist with the basic question, do I tell her that I'm having sex with men or that I want to have sex with men? And my feeling was that I should not, that I'd already told her I was gay. And she didn't really want to know any details anyway. So I elected not to do that. That's the advice I got as well. So I didn't. And then, after a few months, she came across, something that led her to, question that, she found my go bag of my supplies for going out, and wanted to know what was going on. So, I told her, and the initial reaction was one of being disappointed or angry, but that fades, and it did fade. And I've learned that a person's initial reaction often changes many times, and that we just have to give each other space to get our brain wrapped around something. And she did. And for the last while here, we're finally to a point where she is okay with me having my boyfriend here in the house. She's never met him. But after she's gone to bed in the evening, it's okay if he comes over. And I'm just so grateful that I have that space. I mean, it is my house just as much as it's hers. It is my space too. But I'm grateful that I'm able to be who I am without having to run around and hide the fact that I'm, you know, having a sexual relationship with another man, that I can do it in my home if I want or need to. So, you know, I'm very appreciative that she's there.
You know, you're one of the things that I noticed right away, Roger, is your story just speaks volumes, both about who you and your wife are. You know, your commitment to speaking the truth, and the you know, the grace that she has extended to you. The, you know, she loves you, obviously, you know, to be as generous as she has been. It just says volumes about both of you.
Thanks, Maddox. I agree. I when you reached out about being on this podcast, I think my initial response was, I'd love to, but I need to check with my wife first. And I explained to her what this podcast was about. And I said, you and I may not know a single other person that's ever heard of this podcast or that will ever listen to it. But having said that, once it's out there, it's out there. And, you know, I intend to share my story openly and honestly. And I can't do that without reflecting some of your story too. And that's why I will not do this unless you're okay with it. And I gave her the option to just say no. And I would have been fine with that. And she said, I don't care. She said, I am totally honest with everyone too. If somebody asks me a question, I just answer it. So she said, I have nothing to be ashamed of.
You know, that's so freeing. It really is. You know, I'm taken back to the quote, you know, speak the truth and the truth will set you free. I might not be quoting it exactly, but the essence is there.
Yeah. After I'd first come out, I think I had said something about, well, I mean, I think I'd probably told a therapist or something that, you know, I don't intend to come out and like start running up the pride flag on the flagpole and, you know, having all the bumper stickers on my car and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't, not initially, but the first time, and this was a couple of years ago, I said something about, we live in an older home that looks wonderful with a flag hanging on the front of it. And I said something about putting out a pride flag. Remember, we have a gay child, queer child. And her response at that time was, well, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not gay. Well, I just let it go. But then a couple of weeks ago, she was leaving town for a family reunion, was going to be gone for 5 days during June, bear in mind. I don't know when this will air, but this is being recorded during Pride Month. And I just thought, to hell with it, I'm putting up a pride flag. So I went and bought the Progress pride flag that shows all the colors. And I walked in and she said, what you have there? And I said, I bought a Progress pride flag to hang on front of the house. And she said, well, I'm not really comfortable with that. She said, I like to decorate my porch for all the holidays, like the 4th of July. And she does. I mean, there's always a theme. And I said, well, you can have 11 months of the year. This is Pride Month. And I want that flag on my house. And that was it. So I put that sucker on the front of the house and I plastered it all over Facebook. And I got hundreds of likes. It was awesome. It looks great. It just really felt good to put it out there. And but kudos to her too for just finally saying, oh, whatever.
Exactly. So, Roger, do you think that having a queer 40-year-old daughter played a role in her ability to accept your situation? Do you think that made it in any way different or easier than it would have been if you didn't have a queer daughter?
Oh, absolutely. I also think there's been a time or two that she felt really outnumbered. But, that's life. Yes, it was easier. And of course, it's also ironic that when my daughter came out, she was in college and I did not handle it well at all. I mean, I wasn't a complete jackass, but I mean, the first time we were in a social situation and she showed up with, a tattooed girl with all the colored hair and all of that. I mean, I'd never been seen in public with a person like that, heteronormative, this was back in the early, this was 20 years ago. And I just wasn't comfortable. And then, finally, but it was not just a rejection. I wasn't rejecting her. I was rejecting myself.
I was just going to ask how much of that was your discomfort with self in that moment.
Oh, absolutely. Discomfort. Exactly. Yeah.
When we are aware of what we are, but we're in denial of what we are, it makes it real hard for us to be around somebody that's like us.
And I am a professional musician and a librarian. And if you know anything about either of those two fields, they are loaded with LGBTQ people. So I have rubbed elbows with hundreds of gay men over the years. They've been some of my best friends, but I could never let them know.
Yeah. Until now.
Yeah. 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 And the ones that I really care about, I've gone back and had a conversation with, they've been absolutely lovely. Absolutely lovely and accepting, and it's been awesome.
Yeah.
I had feared not being accepted by the gay community, and that was a fear I really shouldn't have worried about.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love hearing that, because not everybody's as fortunate as you are. Our community we have elements of our community that can be extremely judgmental.
Yeah. Well, I hang out with these guys in the men's chorus, and they're just awesome. I've got rehearsal tonight. It's our last rehearsal of our 32nd season, and Wednesday nights is my favorite night of the week. I just absolutely love it. Some of my best friends that I've had in my whole life. But I just feel like at this time in my life, whereas before, back in the 2010s, my life was just getting smaller and smaller. Now it's just getting bigger and bigger.
Isn't that amazing?
It's wonderful. It's just awesome.
I just want to call out that you did that, Roger. That's not something that just happened to you or got handed to you, or, oh, I have no idea how this happened. You took charge of your life. You took responsibility. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, when I got sober, the only person that I could get sober for and stay that way was for myself. It's a great act of self-love to do that. It's very hard.
And so glad you called that out.
And I've learned, I don't think I've ever, and I've heard you talk about this on the podcast a lot, it's about the ability to love yourself. And I have never, I mean, this, you know, we're judgmental and it sounds egotistical, but I have never loved myself as much as I do now. And, you know, I don't look particularly successful, or I'm not famous or wealthy, but I really like who I am. And I'm very proud of that.
Well, and because you really like who you are, others are going to really like who you are, because that's just the way it works. Not everybody, you know, there'll be some people that will find that off-putting, but those aren't your tribe.
No. Well, and this is one of the reasons I kind of wanted to be on this broadcast, on this podcast, is because I've listened to a lot of podcasts, and this is not a shameless plug. I think it's the best one. I think it has touched my life, and I know that it has helped many other men. And if there's something about my story that could be of help to some other man out there who is gay, who is in a heterosexual marriage, or maybe who's not in a marriage, but who's coming out later in life, it's never too late.
It is never too late, and we are never too old. My father found love at age 82. My mom had passed away. He found a girlfriend for a period of years, and then she passed away. He found another girlfriend at 82 that stayed with him until the time of his death. And at that point, I was single and had been for a number of years. And I said to myself, your father over there has shown you that it's never too late and you're never too old.
Yep. And isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful. There's one more piece of your puzzle that I want to ask about, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it because we've already pretty much spent our time, but we kind of know how your wife has handled and responded to the mixed, wait a minute, I can't say it. Say it again.
Mixed orientation marriage.
There we go.
A mom, M-O-M.
How did the boyfriend respond? How did the boyfriend deal with having to share you with a wife? At the end of the day, you go home to sleep in a house with her. Maybe not sleep with her, but sleep in a house.
Right, I understand. Yeah, my take on it is that the majority of guys that I see, like on the dating apps, if they're looking for a long-term relationship, odds are they would not be willing to share the person with someone else. But that wasn't what I was looking for. So it is difficult. It is difficult to find a person who is okay with it, but they're out there.
They are out there.
Yeah,
because yeah. You've met a
well,
whole room
because not every gay man who's single is looking for. They aren't. There are guys out there who don't want partners, that don't want husbands, but they would like something more than a random hookup too.
That and, space in between. Yep.
Yeah. So I think that's what we're trying to find, is that space between two. And I know enough guys for whom this has worked, that have had long-term boyfriends for years, and had their marriage survive, if not thrive. There's more honesty in my marriage now than there has been because of this.
That's beautiful. That's truly beautiful. The power of the truth. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your story is amazing, and I'm so honored and grateful to be able to be the recipient, to hear this story first tense, or have you say that, first person.
Right.
Thank you for your vulnerability and just sharing so openly.
Oh, you're real welcome. I have shared about it quite a bit. And if this was the first time I were talking about it, it would be difficult. But it's just who I am now. And I've talked about this at any number of times in venues, and you know, I don't make a big public deal out of it, but my best friends, they know everything. Absolutely.
So if you were going to share your words of wisdom with a man that might be embarking on a similar situation, has a wife that he fully intends to stay married to, but is embarking on the possibility he's coming out or has come out, wants to embark on the possibility of a boyfriend in addition to the wife, what words of wisdom would you share?
You're not alone. And the sooner you realize that there are many men just like you who have preceded you on this journey, who are willing to talk to you and share their love and wisdom with you, it's so much easier. So I would just say, be open to learning, and you go at your own speed, you know.
You mentioned the organization. It was called Husbands
Out to Wives.
Out to Wives. Would you send me a link to that?
Sure.
I will put that
it's
in
a
the
private
show notes.
Group. It's a private group, and people can, if they're interested, they can read about it. And I don't recall all the criteria, but basically you have to be gay, bi, in a heterosexual marriage, and you either have or intend to come out to the wife.
Okay. I would love to include that in the show notes as
sure.
a resource.
I'd be happy to do that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Roger. Are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
I don't have a seatbelt on, but I'll try.
I bet you'll do great. Question number one, if you only had moments to live, what would be your greatest regret?
Denying myself the fun and camaraderie and sensuality and all the wonderful things that a gay life can have, denying myself that gift, because I believe it is a gift that I just somehow didn't feel worthy of. I wish that, you know, I wish that I could have discovered it sooner. But I'm grateful for, you know, I'm still upright.
Yes. Yes. You know, the flip side of that is being grateful that you just didn't live out your life and die without discovering it.
Yes. I mean, it's a tricky thing because, I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, I wish I'd known this back when I was in college. I mean, of course, after a lot of work, I mean, I now see that, you know, I've had same-sex attraction since at least the seventh grade, probably earlier, but I never permitted myself to do anything other than just have fantasies that went on for decades. If I had acted on that and done, you know, if I had come out back in the 70s, well, number one, I would probably not be here because I would have had AIDS and died.
There's a strong possibility. You know, I'm exact same age as you are, and there were lots. Our generation was the one that was hit the hardest.
One of my college friends was dead within, you know, a couple of years of when I saw him last.
Lots of people went down.
I would probably be dead. But then I would have denied myself the experience of living with my wife for all these years, of having, and I know that same-sex couples have children, but I wouldn't have those children, and I wouldn't have my granddaughter. And I mean, if I had to choose between having them and you know, having not come out, I would still be in the closet. But there was no, it wasn't, that was not a choice I ever had to make. I could have it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that again, Roger.
You don't have to choose between keeping the marriage and the children necessarily. You can have it all. You can, with enough adult conversation and support of other friends and therapists and organizations of people that are on this path together, it's quite achievable to have it all. And I feel like I do. I'm very grateful.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. So what has been the best moment of your life thus far? That shining star.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that question. Well, this doesn't have anything to do with the gay experience, but I would say when my first child, my daughter, was born. You know, being present in the operating room for my wife's C-section, and greeting her, and that's just remarkable.
Your intuition told me that might be what you would say. I wasn't sure. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
I mean, there are some other things too. I mean, you know, the first time I had sex with a man. I mean, it was absolutely exhilarating.
Mind blowing, right?
Yeah. And it was like, well, I guess there's no doubt that you really are gay, because that was awesome.
I love it. I remember it. It was many, many years ago, but I remember it well. It was like, oh my God, what have I been waiting for?
Yep.
The last question, Roger, what is your superpower?
I'm certainly not a therapist. I have no training in that, but I'm a wonderful listener, and people want to share their lives with me. And I mean, we're both 66, Maddox, and there's a lot of lived experience that we have, and you've been paying attention, and as have I, and I've learned a lot about, I know what's worked for me and what's not worked for me, and I'm happy to share that with other people. So I really aspire to be a very approachable friend.
I love that. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, This has been absolutely amazing. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much. And there's one thing I want to leave you with, and I know I say this pretty much at the end of every episode, but it's true at the end of every episode, and that is I do absolutely experience you as an authentic gay man, Roger.
And I'm looking right back at one. It's awesome. And it even says authentic right above your head on the screen. So
it does.
In case there was any doubt, which exactly. There was.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. And of course, now that, you know, whenever my episode is eventually aired, then everyone else will know that I'm authentic too. So
yes, they will. The whole world is going to know
the whole world
authentic
will know.
Roger.